Hello, welcome to Base Camp for Men. I'm your host, Tony Rizak. This is a show that gives you insights and resources in how to live a more courageous life. We look to assist you on your hero's journey in any way that we can. Truth is our compass, humanity, our tribe. Welcome and let's get started. Hello, Base Campers. I hope you're all doing well. One of the things I've always tried to do on Base Camp is to speak the truth, but also to shine the light in some of the nooks and crannies of our awareness. And I try to do this both on a personal level as well as the collective narrative level. And the question I often ask is, what challenges to clear seeing are we currently facing? And what are the threats and opportunities for we the people? In America, the primary threat that I see, the one that underlies all of the threats, is the long march through our institutions of the Marxist Communist agenda. It has become clear that most of our institutions are infested with Marxist and communist people and ideas. And once you see it, you can't unsee it. It's unsettling to see, but awake is better than sleepwalking while your free nation is being taken from the inside. Are you following me? Today's interview is with my new friend, Semi Bird, and we get into the whole Marxist, socialist, communist incursion into our American institutions and highlight education in particular. And my sense is that Marxism quietly snuck up on many Americans, but as my guest and I see it, it needs to be looked at, studied, and countered at every turn. The worst thing we can do as Americans is surrender to this agenda, which is communist, globalist, and deeply anti-American and anti-humanity. One of the things that characterizes Marxism and thus communism is that it incites hatred amongst the people. Isn't that interesting? It creates and escalates conflicts and seizes power through violent revolution or subterfuge. To quote a famous Chinese communist, Chiang Kai-shek, who said, quote, "The goal of communism isn't to solve problems, but to expand global contradictions to the greatest extent possible and cause human struggle to continue forever," unquote. At the point where you have a portion of the population that can't tell the difference between men and women, I would say communism is succeeding in creating the contradictions to the greatest extent possible. And look at what one of the main goals of Marxism and communism is: perpetual struggle. Sounds like the current state of affairs, doesn't it? Is this what we want? Stress, perpetual struggle, hatred of others, division? Can we wake up from this bad dream in time to save future generations? Let's go dialogue with Semi about this most important challenge that Americans face. How do we start to shift things back away from the hatred and division that Marxism creates and start to think about what is good for America and Americans again? How do we reclaim our history and our civics from communist influence, so-called scholars and teachers who have an entirely different agenda than helping children thrive? It's a big topic, and Semi and I take a big swing at it today, with more to come, I'm sure. Enjoy the episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Stand Up Now Apparel. Stand Up Now has amazing designs centered on God, family, freedom, and patriotism. They use only the softest cotton in their designs and have gear for the whole family. There's something for everyone. Base Campers, I know you're going to love their products. Go support them at www.standupnowapparel.com and use the code BASECAMP to receive a 10% discount and free shipping. And now, on to our interview. My guest today is former gubernatorial candidate Semi Bird. Semi was raised by a single mother in the Bay Area of California. He is a veteran who served in the U.S. Marine Corps from 1978 to 1985, receiving multiple medals and honors for his service. He then reenlisted in 2001, where he then served as an Army Special Forces Green Beret. Wow. Semi is a husband and father, a man of faith, and he is a proud American who leads by example and truly honors God, country, and family. Here is my interview with Semi Bird. Okay, I am here with Semi Bird, proud American and veteran, former gubernatorial candidate and founder of the Empowering Washington Freedom Alliance. Semi, welcome back to Base Camp for Men. It is great to have you on the show.
Tony, it's good to be with you, brother. Thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, you know, we had a great interview just a couple weeks ago. It came out as on Base Camp for Men. We're actually going to turn it into an American Pulse episode shortly. And we touched on all kinds of things. But one of the things we touched on that you and I both, our ears kind of perked up, was this whole idea of culture, like Marxism, communism's incursion into the American institutions, everything, education, culture, morality. I mean, it is in everything. It's one of those things that once you see it, you can't unsee it. And I remember my friend Mark Jackson, who we did an episode on it, and he was pointing to cultural Marxism. He's sending me all these videos. I'm like, what does this have to do with everything? And once I started clicking, my jaw dropped and I was like, uh-oh. But you know what I mean? So we're going to get into all the Marxist communism stuff alongside the American mindset, American culture, the American Republic. But I wanted to hand it to you first because I think a lot of people, you know, you see a lot of people with Trump derangement syndrome on the left and even center, even in our own party. You know, there's people with Trump derangement syndrome. And I think it's people think that it's this war between Republicans and Democrats or a uniparty versus pro-America or people that like Donald Trump versus people that don't like Donald Trump. But viewed the way that we're talking about it, I think there's a much bigger conflict going on. And a lot of those little conflicts are sort of illusory to get us barking at each other and all of that when there's something else going on. So kind of sketch that out a little bit for us, because I think it's a really important distinction. People maybe are getting triggered by the wrong conflict. Does that make sense?
Right. Well, I'll do my best to delineate between the different philosophies and current world events. But I'll tell you, I was sharing with my wife earlier this morning. I almost want to explode with information. There's so much built up frustration with the current state of affairs based on these theories that have embedded themselves into the American culture, into the American way of life, and into our American society as we know it. And so let me try to kind of break it down. When you look at Marxism, you know, this is 1848, I'm sure, Karl Marx, Frederick Engels, and they created the Communist Manifesto. The father of Marxism, if you will. And so Karl Marx intended Marxism to be this theoretical, philosophical outline that established this struggle or conflict between the richest of current society in Eastern Europe and the poorest, the working class, so the laborers. And so they're top 1%, if you will. And we've heard that term here in America. And he talked about, and he called them the bourgeoisie, that top 1%, or the ownership class. And then the working class was the proletariat. And Marxism it's really this 19th century philosophy of the oppression of the working class. And we hear that term, the oppressed and the oppressors. And we hear and we see victimhood being propagated throughout the American culture. And we'll get into what's been happening in our schools. But Marxism is that baseline foundation philosophy. Then you go into socialism. Socialism is this post-fall of free market capitalism. And that is when the methodological framework of socialism comes to bear, where it outlines certain things that many, you know, saw in the news recently, where you have socialists, and in America's case, democratic socialists, they shift ownership of private corporations and companies to the state, to the government. So now government owns companies and corporations. There's an abolishment of borders. There's an abolishment of law enforcement. There's an abolishment of prisons. And so this is this implementation of socialism, which is that transitional point between Marxism and communism, with communism being the end result. You have the philosophy of Marxism. You have the implementation of socialism, which is that pragmatic framework where now the people or the state runs all businesses, all operations, and then the communist state, you know, that advanced state is where we hope to get. And I want to note something, and I'll give it back to you in a second, is that, you know, Vladimir Lenin, you know, that Bolshevik revolutionary, and you see what happened with Lenin's rule in Russia in the early days, he even referred to the Marxism, socialism, communism, he saw socialism and defined it as that transitionary point between capitalism and full-on communism. And what I'm saying is textbook. It's history. It's the science of knowledge. It's not based on opinion. And then Karl Marx himself also saw socialism as being that transition point between the fall of capitalist society and then the embracement of communism. And so that's how we break it down. And there's so much I want to talk about, how it got into our school system. But think of it this way, as a spider web. And the spider does its business, and you think of this complex spider web as you're looking at it, and you're going, man, that must have taken a long time. And it's methodological, it's just precision. And that's exactly what happened with Marxism, socialism in America, leading to eventual communism in certain regards. It's that spider web, and the American culture has been caught up in it, but it started slowly, and it grew, and it grew, and the web grew, and it starts to encapsulate a free market society, a Republican republic constitutional government, and that's mm-hmm. what we're getting right now.
Yeah, you know, I think before we, and we're going to get into the schools here, we're both, you and I are both very passionate about the education system. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think a lot of people, on a sidebar, a lot of people can't imagine a communist America. Even people on the left would be like, no, there's not a communist, you know, incursion in our institutions. But it is, to your point, the long march in the institutions. It's decades and decades. And I think a lot of people don't realize how meticulously these things are planned, and yeah. and they're generational. They don't need immediate results. They want the long march. And one of the things that I've noticed over time, and I wanted to get your thoughts on it, is that Marxism is very deceptive. It says certain things and does other things, and it gets the followers. And in this, and I'm not picking on the left, it's just we can all be guilty of sort of internalizing our silos beliefs, let's say, our value system, and maybe stop looking at issues, you know, setting aside those values to look at the issues to say, well, how do I really feel? And I feel like a lot of the people on the left and women on the left, I don't know if they really, if they examine something, and I know it's controversial, examined abortion. I know a lot of really smart women on the left, and if they, I just don't think they've looked at the issue. They just decided it back in college when they said, you got to be pro-choice, right? And so yeah. the Marxists did a great job of saying, do you want choice for your life? And so I do, as an American, Sammy, I want choice. So if you say, do you want choice? Yeah, I want choice. But they plastered this anti-human, anti-child, anti-family thing and made that the linchpin of their belief system, so that women, I think if you showed women, just set aside your beliefs and showed them the facts about, you know, what unborn babies are like and stuff, it's not, and they've kind of convinced them that having children is a terrible thing. And it's like, it's the greatest gift of all, you know, it's God's greatest gift to us. And I'm not trying to preach Christian versus non-believers or whatever. I just think there's a lot of people on the left, men and women, who got duped by the deception of Marxism into fighting for a particular thing that I think if they sat down and really sat with themselves, got out into nature and said, wait, let me look at the evidence. Let me really sit with this. Do I really think this is a good form of birth control, you know, to right. kill unborn babies? Like, it's terrible. Like, everybody knows it's terrible, but yet they just defend it. And I don't, yeah. I'm not mean about it. I don't think they hate babies. I just think that they haven't examined this particular belief system since the Marxist mind virus put it there when they were in their 20s or whatever, and they've never yeah. looked at it since. Does that make sense
well,
to you?
It really comes down to the view. Yeah. So when we're on this topic of, you know, the rights of the unborn or the morality or immorality of the discussion point, there's a couple things that I think we should acknowledge, and everything I'll say is going to be fundamentally correct based on knowledge, science, and history, because I think it's important to always come with the truth and then identify what your beliefs are, what your faith is, and what your opinions are. And in this case, Marxism and its original definition, Marxism, socialism, communism, is secular. It's without God. It's without religion. Because back then, Karl Marx himself, right, the father of Marxism and the beginning of communism and socialism, believed that religion was a way to dominate and control the working class, to control the citizenry, if you will. So again, the belief was without God. And then you go to the discussion on life, and then you hear these terms or these phrases as, well, when is a baby a baby? Is it at conception or is it at birth? And so then you default to a belief that life begins at birth. Well, then it's easier on the conscious and that intrinsic morality to say, well, this was never really a baby or a living human being, you know, and so it's okay. And so you have this self-justification theory and moral compromise based on definition and terminology and how you misplace the words, if you will. And so that is what's happening with what you're talking about. You change the words and you say, no, this isn't a baby. Life doesn't begin until birth. And even though science will tell you something different, you'll find that a lot of the Marxist, socialist, communist beliefs, which in fact, fundamental and historically, are left-leaning. When I say left-leaning, I'm going to step back on that and say it evolves from the left. That is just a fact. It evolves from the left. And there's no surprise that you have this rapidly growing populace in America who affiliate politically as democratic socialists. And that is because these theories, these Eastern European theories, have been brought in by leftists. That is just a historical fact. So that is my thought on what you're referring to. And when you talk about the parties and we talk about establishment and R versus D, that's part of Saul Alinsky's rules for radicals. And for those of your viewers who are not familiar with Saul Alinsky, you know, Saul Alinsky, this is back in late 60s, early 70s out of Chicago. And we know one of our presidents, you know, was a community activist out of Chicago. Well, Saul Alinsky was a community activist out of Chicago. And he came up and wrote this book on, you know, 12 Rules for Radicals. And one of the things he writes on, one of the rules is to, as you're, you know, projecting strength, as you're operating within your comfort zone, you use force against the opposition. You get them fighting within themselves. You get them to hold true to what they believe in, all the while they're doing your work. For example, he said, get them to attack you on something that you're doing to them while you're doing it. And it shows this gaslighting concept that these leftists are attacking conservatives on a topic using their same language or their words, compassion, tolerance, love, all these words that are emotionally based. And you think if you're a young person, well, this seems right. This seems nice. And what we're saying now, affordability, it's your right. Free health care, free food, free transportation. Everything's free and it feels good. And naturally, instinctively, we want it because it's free. But they don't tell you that there is a quid pro quo. There is this underlying payback that you will have to give in exchange for all that free stuff. And I'm looking forward to going more in depth into that, because that is that catch-all. That goes back to that spider web. As it's growing throughout the American culture, and it gets young people in their grasp, in the ignorant, and the apathetic, and the complacent into that web, then you can't get out. And that's the danger.
Yeah, you know, I'm seeing it. Well, we're all seeing it. But I think the light bulb went on for me when I'm like, we've got a growing state and they're creating more and more dependencies, more and more dependence on the state, which to me is kind of like a classic communist move. It's like, okay, this is America. They have their values. They have this American dream. They have this everyone. They have this meritocracy. Everyone can get ahead. Everyone can work hard and bootstrap and have future generations. Now they've kind of flipped it. There's a lot in from the Marxists about, you know, you don't need to work. Like you can, if you've feign a, you know, if you feign a disability, it, you know, there's ways we can let, well, they let lots of people in the country illegally as immigrants and then set them up with debit cards and phones and all these different things, bring it in. Now, some people would say, oh, the Democrats are creating a new block of voters, and that's a different episode. And perhaps that's true. I think it is. But to me, they keep creating more of the dependency class, which strengthens their position, because they're like, hey, we got 30% of the people that need help from the government because things are just so expensive and nobody really wants to work. And I remember, not to get too far off to the side here, but I remember when I was in Eastern Europe when the Berlin Wall came down. And so I was in the Czech Republic and I was talking to some surgeons and doctors there. And they were asking me about America. I was telling them my, you know, viewpoints on it. And they were saying, you know what sucks about communism? I'm a trained surgeon. I'm a PhD and I'm a cardiac surgeon. And I only make like $800 a month more than somebody that doesn't work. Yeah. And there's no incentive. I work my tail off. And he goes, what kind of money would I make in the United States? And I was like, oh my God, you would make insane money. You know, and I just told him you'd have probably a couple houses. You'd have a big mansion. You'd have high status. You know, I go, you know how it is. You probably see things about American doctors and what their lifestyle is like. But over there, there was no incentive to work, because it's like, if I don't work, the state gives me $2,000, you know, a place to live and $2,000 in food stamps and on all that stuff. If I do work, I make $2,300 a month, but I'm working my tail off. Like, what's the incentive? I'm seeing the starts of that with how much they're creating dependence on the states here. And I'm like, that's kind of the way communism works. Just create a whole class that needs the state, doesn't want to work, isn't motivated. Pretty soon people are like, why should I work? I can't make that much money relative to what the state's going to give me. So
That's the whole idea. And what you heard from that other person goes to the problem that socialism presents for an American culture or an American way of life or a constitutional republic. And what I want to do is kind of go back a little bit to the foundation of our nation. I mean, we just celebrated our 250th birthday and anniversary as a free nation, as a free society. Mm. And if you look at what our country was founded on, it was this idea of, you know, John Locke's philosophy of a social contract. And that portends to say that all men are born free, equal, and independent. Whereas with socialism, communism, Marxism, we're this collective. You know, we're all equal. Everything's equal, ran by the state, ran by the government, but it's a collective. And so when you think of independence and being independent, free mind, free thought, to go as far as you're willing to go or wanting to go to achieve your dream, no matter how far you go, no matter how hard you work, there's a cap on it. There's a limit on it. And then I'm going to go back and I want you to think about these things. There's a cap on how successful you can be. And if you work too hard and you hit that cap, then you become part of that 1%, which you can't have under socialism. So what does that nurture? Well, it nurtures this lack of effort, this lack of motivation to achieve. And what does that do to development of technology? What does that do to our education system? What does that do to our productivity as a nation? It makes us weak and weaker, and it basically evaporates the foundation of our nation. Government in America is a necessary evil. That is known. It was instituted among men according to the Declaration of Independence, deriving its just powers from the consent of the governed. This is what's different about America than any other country in the world, is we formed a government that was already ran by the people. So when you look at socialism and Marxism and you talk about the oppression of the people and the 1%, well, America was based on giving control of this nation to the people. Therefore, the argument for Marxism, socialism, and communism is defunct. It makes no sense. And it is the antithesis to a free American society. When you build and grow this mindset of victimhood and hopelessness within communities, which is what we're seeing in the inner cities. We just saw it unveiled just a few days ago in Seattle, Washington, with a mass shooting. Mm-hmm. If you look at that, it's not about guns or gun violence. It's about people and behavior. You know, my PhD studies are in psychology, and you'd be surprised how much psychology and the whole area of psychological operations, PSYOPs, comes to bear when you're talking about Marxism, socialism, and communism.
Yep.
They are literally creating a pathway to the destruction of the American way of life, the destruction of our government. And last thing on this, I would just say this. If you're a veteran, you know, you swore an oath to protect and to defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Communism, socialism, and Marxism is a direct threat to the Constitution of the United States, evidenced by this news interview with the co-chair of the Democratic Socialist of America, where she talked about eliminating the president's position, the Senate, packing the Supreme Court. What they're doing is they are literally going against the Constitution of the United States. What they're doing is they're unraveling our justice system. And the first thing we did when we brought our Constitution forth was we said we were going to establish justice. How can you establish justice and defund the police? How can you establish justice without secure borders, without regulating human behaviors with laws and being law-abiding citizens? That's why we brought government into play to begin with, to enforce our rights, to protect citizens from the natural tendencies and behaviors of mankind. And I get passionate about this, Tony, so I'm going to give it back to you. But there's just so much. I told you, I feel like I want to explode with information about what I've learned over the years.
I love it, Sammy. I love it. I'm just as passionate about it as you are. So I just love it. It's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you back on. But I want to turn to education. I got this. Yeah. There's a great two-part volume that the Epoch Times, doesn't matter how you want to say it, Epic, Epoch. Mm-hmm. They did a two-volume titled How the Specter of Communism is Ruling Our World. It is packed with information. And the Epoch Times is interesting because they're Falun Gong, they're Qigong practitioners that were persecuted in China. So they fled a communist system and they're very pro-America, very free market. They don't like communism and they're sounding the alarm bell. Anytime they see stuff and stories that highlight some of the things we're talking about, they put it right in the paper that's widely read. But I grabbed a couple of quotes that I wanted to read you one and then hand it to you. So education, so this is from one of their books. It says, quote, the education system shoulders the future of a country, a nation, and human civilization itself. It's a long-term endeavor whose impact extends through centuries or even millennia. Looking back at the past 100 years, the American education system has been all but broken by the infiltration and influence of communist ideology. Parents and teachers have had their hands tied and cannot easily give students a good education. Schools, which should have cultivated students' talent, have instead indulged them and led them astray. Much of society is deeply worried about students' lack of morality, low skill level, fragile psyches, and bad habits, as well as the chaotic anti-traditional and anti-social trends they're caught up in, unquote. I wanted to give you a chance to talk about, I've got more to say about education, but I wanted to hand it to you about that. You know, they're just going right for it, saying there's been a communist takeover in the education system and parents don't know what to do about it.
Yeah. So again, a lot to say about this. I'll give you an example. The Pledge of Allegiance, which I pray that all of us know, but what a lot of people don't know, you know, the Pledge of Allegiance came came out the first in 1892, right? And it was part of a school project. It was for, and it did not have one nation under God. That phrase was not part of the original Pledge of Allegiance. It did not come to bear until 1954, when President Eisenhower brought it forward to Congress, that proposal, to add the words. And why did President Eisenhower inspire this change, right, by law? And this is a bill that he brought forward. Why did it happen? It was because of communism. Historians will tell you, and again, it's not right or leftist historians, it's just the history of fact. He brought it forward because of the threat of communism in America. The president at the time, President Eisenhower, believed that the communist threat, being a secular philosophy as it is, absence of God, during the communist threat, he believed that Americans needed God at that time more than any other time. And then you go back to the founding of our nation, where it talks about nature's rights and nature's God, who gives us that right to equality. All of these things come to bear. And when you think about how our children are being raised in the schools, and I say raised in the schools, acknowledging that parents are the primary stakeholders in their children's upbringing, that is a fact that the left, and when I say the left, Marxism and socialism and communism will say, well, children are the property of the state. The children fall under that jurisdiction, not the parents, which children of the state, if you will, which is scary. But when you bring it into schools, when you start to have these teachers' unions propagate these ideologies and they're teaching it to children, you go from DEI, diversity, inclusion, right? All right. And equity, you go from that to transgender, gender dysphoria, all these things that are affecting children. We can get into COVID and masking of our children and all these other things in the schools. How is it that the schools are being the center point to, number one, first, removing civics from the curriculum? So you stop teaching them about America, about American exceptionalism. You stop teaching them that in this country, people run the government, and you start raising these victims, and you start to delineate between white kids and black kids and rich kids and poor kids, and you start talking about white privilege, and you start building those segregations amongst our children, all the while indoctrinating them with these Marxist ideologies through DEI, critical race theory. And by the way, I've read the book Critical Race Theory, just as an academic. And Richard DeGotto, Crenshaw, Bell, this goes back to the 80s, Critical Race Theory, DEI, and it talks about this intersectionality, which is basically that victimhood, the oppressed, and the delineation of races and how white oppression, and you're hearing these same phrases, oppression, victims, the white upper class 1%, and they're the reasons for your life being this, and we give you stuff. It starts in the schools. And when you stop teaching children that the government belongs to them, that they have value, and that regardless of your race, creed, or color, you can rise. And this is my own personal life, the kid born into poverty to a single mom in the inner city, right? That was not preordained that I would stay in that situation, because in America, I can rise above any disparity if I choose to. And you called it meritocracy, or what we say, a meritocracy. So you have to take out civics and American history from the curriculum. And it's been happening for over two generations. And you wonder why the Democratic Socialists of America is growing so rapidly, but it's because so many young people are powering that growth with their participation, because again, they hear words of tolerance, compassion, fairness, and they don't understand if you start pulling from that poisonous tree, you're going to get sick and it's going to spread. And that's what we're seeing right now. That's the problem with the education system right now. is that you have teachers' unions controlling what's being taught to children, and you have these states that are propagating it by law, saying what kids learn and don't learn, and isolating parents out of the school so that they can do with those students what they will. And that's a shame. You're exploiting the minds and the innocence of children is what's happening.
Well, and I remember years ago, I was on a John Taylor Gatto kick. He was Teacher of the Year a number of times in New York City, and he was very critical of the public schools for all the reasons we're mentioning. And he was beloved by his students. But I remember reading something where I was like, he said, what is happening in public education, he says, in the 1890s, if you were to step into a public classroom in New England in the 1890s, you would see them doing teenagers doing in Latin classes and doing college graduate level mathematics. Mm-hmm. He goes, so he goes, are the schools, people talk about how great American schools are. Look how far down we've spiraled.
Yeah.
We've replaced critical thinking, mathematics, classical education, to your point earlier, no civics, and replaced it with wokeism and all, sexualized the content. And I mean, it's really embarrassing. I remember the light bulb went off for me, and I'm going to shift it a little bit, stay in education, but let's shift to universities, because this is where a lot of maybe kids that come from conservative backgrounds, let's say, or kids of faith, they go off to university and, they're exposed to a ton of Marxist ideas, using the wordplay that you had mentioned. But also I always like to mention the impact of authors like Howard Zinn and Noam Chomsky, because for me, I thought I was so smart reading Noam Chomsky and Howard Zinn in college. Like, now I know more than my parents and blah, blah, blah. Well, they didn't tell me a couple of things. First of all, Howard Zinn lied. He was a Marxist communist, and he just lied about everything. Like, he wasn't really respected by other historians. They were like, he's not basing any of this on facts. This is a polemic. This isn't like a history book, yet it's the best-selling history book of all time. And I'm not going to get into Howard Zinn's specifics, but I remember one of the things later when I read it, I was like, he's saying that Abraham Lincoln didn't really stand for the freedom of slavery. He was saying that's an irrelevant fact. That's not what he should be known for. And then he spouted off all these lies. I'm like, everybody knows Abraham Lincoln. That was his thing, man. Like, that's American history. And you're just like saying, no, that's not what really happened. And then you have all these young people that are like, oh, all these founders, they're just ruthless, colonists and land acknowledged, all the things that they spin at us. And then the other one that was really egregious was Noam Chomsky. I remember reading all of the things that America was doing militarily and black ops and all these different things abroad, political assassination, regime change, like all these things. But Noam Chomsky never distinguished that the CIA really wasn't representing the American people or the American Republic. The CIA was an arm of the deep state, an arm of the globalist communist one world government. Like, he acted like we should be ashamed because the CIA was doing all these shady things, but the CIA wasn't really representing us. But he never, ever in any of his books made that distinction. It was always like, this is what America is really about. This is how evil America is. It's like, I agree that communism is evil. I agree that the globalist agenda and genocide and all these things is evil. He never said that. And so you have a lot of young radical activists that I see having internalized Chomsky's vision of America, but he never gave you an accurate picture, Sammy.
Yeah. Well, that's what they do. And again, you have Zinn, you have Chomsky, you have Alinsky. Mm-hmm. So here's something that you maybe many others don't understand. These three individuals never associated themselves as Marxists, even though much of their teachings and much of their philosophies aligned so closely with Marxism, they never came out and said, "Oh, I'm a Marxist. I'm a socialist. I'm a communist." They never did, for a good reason, because in their times they knew it would have presented a roadblock. When you come out with that back then, people would go, "Oh no, I don't want to be associated with that." Unlike today, but you captured it. It's misdirection. It's taking words out of context. It's rewriting history. And you have that Hannah Nicole Jones, you know, not too long ago, who came up with her 1619 project, right? And it was published in the New York Times. And she did the same thing. What are these and they're considered leftists, not from a Democrat, Republican, but literally leftist is the terminology often associated with these, 90% of the time associated with these individuals. They had to go back and cloud and taint American history. And then you start focusing on the institution. You talked about Lincoln, the institution of slavery. It's important that people understand. And again, I am not taking sides on parties. I'm talking academically. The institution, the immoral institution of slavery, was supported and nurtured by Southern Democrats, right? You know, you have the Republican Party at the time, which that's a whole nother discussion as we talk about uniparty and establishment running political parties of today. But when you go back to the origination of the Republican Party, to which Abraham Lincoln was the first president of that new Republican Party, it was based on the abolition of slavery. The abolishment of slavery is what it was based on. So you have this first president of that party with its founding principle and initiative of abolishing slavery. But yet you're going to bring these philosophers of the 20th century in to start saying, "Well, that's not the case. Abraham Lincoln was this and he was that." They'll never tell you that he was born and raised in a one room cabin in the middle of nowhere with his little sister with a dirt floor, living in poverty and foraging off the land. They won't tell you that, because that would make this president that's being portrayed as this wealthy, elite white man into literally someone who was raised in such poverty and despair with the death of his mother. And I can go on and on about that. They don't tell you the truths of history. And we know that slavery was disgusting and immoral. We know that as a Christian society, I'm going to say that again, America, one nation under God, constitution created for a Christian people, was the origination, according to John Adams, one of our most prominent founders. His words, not just mine. When you start to eat away at what America was founded on, what it stood for, which was a Christian nation, and I'm not saying that in attack of any other faith. We have a First Amendment for a reason, and I fully support it. But the reality in the history holds true. Our nation was intended to embrace certain values. These were biblical values. Our nation was intended to be a nation that was controlled and ran by the citizens of the nation. So the citizens had ownership. What they're trying to do is separate out that ownership is not with the citizens. Ownership is with an elite class. If that happens, which I will argue that it has been happening, that we, the people, have been outsourcing our authority to establishment groups. You've heard me say this before. That is true on both sides of the aisle. But nonetheless, you cannot argue that our history said that was not the case. That's not the way it's supposed to be. And we right now, in the 21st century, right after this 250th anniversary as a nation, we, the people, need to take it back. Take that authority back, be cognizant of what's happening with not only the establishment, but Marxism, socialism. We need to be aware of that. We need to protect our children. We need to hold true to American values, but we have to understand, what are American values? What are they based on? That is what's been taken away. So you can have these Zins and Chomskys and Joneses come in with their distortion of American history and attack on our American way of life. And if we don't know any better, we'll sit back apathetically and complacently let it happen.
You know, I was thinking while you were talking, like, even if you did something that seems small, like had the kids do a book report on Abraham Lincoln, like tell the truth about what he stood for, what his background was and all that. And you had, and you did a book just on that part, would cut through so much of their, of what they teach the kids about what an awful nation America is. And yeah, it's kind of, it's insidious. They it's seeped into everything, so that it doesn't seem like maybe on the surface they're doing it. You know, the Epoch Times, I remember hearing my good friend, one of my best friends in the world, Mark Jackson. He is he writes their film reviews, but he also is an actor, and he did the audiobook narrative of the book I mentioned, How the Specter of Communism is Ruling Our World. And so I was listening to Mark do the audio, and there was a bunch of times where he kept saying the devil, you know, about communism. He was using those terms interchangeably, and it was a little jarring for me, where I was like, whoa, what are they saying? And I wanted to read you a passage from the book and get your thoughts on it, because they don't pull any punches. They're saying it's the same thing. It's tied to Satan, this whole anti-human, anti-life thing that comes with communism is the satanic agenda. And so here I'm going to quote, the divine wants man to be humble and full of reverence and wonder at heavenly creation. Communism connives at the demonic and arrogant side in man, encouraging him to revolt against the divine. By amplifying the evil inherent and inescapable in human nature, it exploits the idea of quote unquote freedom to encourage conduct that is unrestrained by morality and unfettered by a sense of duty or honor. The slogan of quote equality unquote is used to stir up envy and vanity, stoking man's desire for fame and material interests. Simply put, the specter of communism is composed of hate. It draws its energy from the hatred that wells up in the human heart. The communist specter is tied to Satan. Often the two are indistinguishable. Thus, we will not make an effort to consider them separately, unquote.
Yeah. Yeah. Powerful. And so if you look at that again, it's important to note the foundation, the originalist of Marxism and communism, Karl Marx himself, again, mm-hmm. said religion, Christianity, is a control factor for man, whereas believers believe that faith is a freedom of the soul. And again, we could speak another hour on that in and of itself, but I can see why that passage came to bear. Because when you think of this from a biblical worldview, that, you know, we are born mm-hmm. into sin, just from a theological standpoint, that would be a biblical fact that, again, that is why Jesus died for our sins, to give us that opportunity for life everlasting. So understanding that would presuppose that earth is controlled by Satan, right? Mm-hmm. That the natural tendencies of mankind. Stay with me in this when I go back to what I talked about or spoke about earlier on the social contract, where it says all men are born free, equal, and independent, but government has to be instituted among men in order to preserve and protect those natural and God-given rights as declared in our Declaration of Independence. So understanding the natural tendencies of humankind, being flawed, if you will, from a theological standpoint, being born into sin and in this environment of sin, right? This is why you have these philosophies that take advantage of these behavioral aspects of human beings. Why the apathy? Why the complacency? Why do we allow it? Why are we being duped with these redefining words and these new thoughts on fairness with a heavy cost? I want to give you one thing. You know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. It's a psychological theory that says that outside of the physiological needs of a human being, the next thing you need is to feel safe and secure, right? And so to feel safe and secure, and you've heard that, safe spaces, having a safe space, and then belonging. Why do people identify this and people identify that way? Because they want to belong. That's part of that safety and security. And then the next level up is this concept of esteem, self-esteem, and feeling like we've accomplished something. Well, here's what's going to happen, because the final phase of Maslow's hierarchy of needs is self-actualization and achievement, right? Your own individual exceptionalism. Marxism, communism, and socialism takes away the opportunity, the American dream, to reach that highest level of self-actualization, of accomplishing. Because what it does, again, as I said earlier, it caps you, it limits you on what you can achieve, because everybody must have everything equally, this collaborative. So not only is individual exceptionalism limited by these theories or philosophies, American exceptionalism is limited, because it spins this idea that American exceptionalism is somehow elitist. It's somehow wrong. But what they don't tell you is American exceptionalism is powered by individual exceptionalism. Every individual, every citizen having that constitutional right to reach beyond their original status, to rise above, to learn, to grow through their own hard work and perseverance. This is what gives America, America. This is what makes America that shining city on the hill that Ronald Reagan spoke of, which comes directly from scripture. You take that away, you take America away. You bring in helplessness, learn helplessness through our school system, and you take away hopefulness of the individual. And you give them this opportunity to blame others, to say that white people are the cause of inner city violence, which I would argue it's a dysfunctional culture that has probably been propagated by these leftists who tell you it's not your fault, blame them.
Yeah.
You justify people's actions, and then you have perpetual poverty. You give them more money, more food subsidies. You give, and you take away a person's desire to rise out of the despair that maybe they were born into. And then you see an increase in violence, increase in crime, and you wonder why this happens. It's because they never admit that the number one killer of black men is black men. They won't admit that, because they'll say it's racism. Well, you're hearing it from a black man who's telling you. That is a statistical fact. And you look at the origination of that, and you can trace it back to poverty. But it's not poverty because of the causation of white oppression. It's poverty that's perpetuated within those communities. And again, my brother, I'm sorry I get excited about this, because being born into poverty, seeing that inner city of East Oakland, and I lived it. And I've grown out of it, because this country gave me an opportunity. I'm a high school dropout, now finishing up my PhD. How did that happen? No one limited me. There was every opportunity for me to grow from outside of myself. And I have sinned, and I have been redeemed. I will tell you that. I have fallen, and I have gotten back up, because I live in a nation that allows me to get back up. That's the beauty of our American way of life. We cannot allow these dysfunctional Eastern European philosophies to undermine what America has always been intended to be.
I love it. I love it. Everything you're saying, you know, I'm looking at the timer. I know we're almost out, but I wanted to give you a chance. In context of what we've talked about today, I just wanted to give you a chance to talk about where people can find you, and talk a little bit about Empowering Washington Freedom Alliance, because I know that's your baby. And it goes right into a lot of the things we were speaking about, particularly in education. So I wanted to give you a chance to just speak about that just a bit, and tell people where they can find you.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Tony. I appreciate it. And I got to say, so Empowering Washington Freedom Alliance, it's I was allowed to be a part of this. This is I'm on the board of directors. This is an organization that existed when I was running for governor, and they supported me, but I got to know them as people, you know, and these are people who love God and country. That's the simplest and most accurate way to define Empowering Washington Freedom Alliance. So they brought me in. And blessed me with the ability to share my thoughts, my knowledge, and education to help grow the organization. And so the organization is an educating organization that brings civics and self-governance back to young people and citizens of all races, all religions, all age groups. Our job is to get out there and inspire people to believe in America again, to understand what it means to be an American citizen, to understand what a free market society is and how blessed we are. And so we are grounded on our biblical worldview, I will say that, but we welcome all and we love our nation, and we are making sure that individuals understand this is not only one nation under God, but this is a nation that is intended to be governed by its citizens. And we want people to get back involved, to self-govern, and to understand that their vote matters, that their vote is their voice, that we are going to stop allowing establishment political organizations to select candidates and feed them down our throats, but we are, the people are going to do our due diligence to learn and to understand that we are here to elect. We choose the candidates that most align with what we believe in, that is going to do good for our citizenry. So we're trying to inspire people to get involved, get engaged, and to just love America again. And we're going to talk about the greatness of America. One thing we're doing, and I'll give it back to you, is that we, unlike a lot of organizations, we are intentionally and directly going into communities that would not usually embrace patriotism and having that faith in God, that belief in our nation. We are going into those communities. We are reaching out to young people. So if anyone wants to get involved and join EWAFA, we welcome you. It's EWAFA, Empowering Washington Freedom Alliance, WAFA.org is our website. We have a blog going on. We're getting a newsletter. We do alerts so we keep people informed and educated in what's happening within their communities. And again, we're going to be active and educating people so we chip away at that group of apathetic, complacent individuals, and we're going to get them to vote. We're going to get them to participate. We want to get them to attend school board meetings and city council meetings. We want them to run for office, of the people, by the people, for the people. We got to bring that back, brother.
I love it, Sammy. Well, it's always so inspiring to connect with you. What a blessing to have you on Basecamp and American Pulse. Thank you for coming on, giving us your insight, your wisdom, and just, I love it. I'm so in alignment with what you're talking about. We share the same values and same love of our nation. So thank you for taking time today, Sammy. God bless your family. And we'll have to, there's a couple other topics in there I wouldn't mind drilling down with you, but we're going to earmark that. And as things unfold, I think you and I, there's a couple other conversations I think would be really fruitful for us to have. So thank you, Sammy. Really appreciate it today.
Thank you. God bless you, brother.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. Man, I love speaking with Sammy. I feel like we just started to peel back the layers on this topic. And if you want to do a deeper dive on your own, here are a couple good resources for you. The Epoch Times wrote the definitive 2-volume series titled How the Specter of Communism is Ruling Our World. It's essential, my friends. Go get it today. Another few authors that I love, one that I'm trying to get on Basecamp, is Os Guinness. He wrote many, many books, but I have two on my library. I have Last Call for Liberty, and I also have Zero Hour America on my shelf. Really good. And James Lindsay's The Marxification of Education is very illuminating and enlightening. And Floyd Brown's book, Counterpunch, is great. He was just a recent guest on Basecamp. So that should get you started in this very important topic. Any or all of these should fill in some blanks on the Marxist-Communist agenda and its impact on our culture and our lives. Thank you, Basecampers, and we'll see you around the fire next week. If you find value in our show and wish to show us some love, we are now making that very easy to do. You simply go to www.basecampformen.com and click on Donate Support Basecamp. You'll find an easy way to make either monthly donations for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate just once. We love the monthly donation and hope to build this up over the coming months, but any show of support is greatly appreciated, honestly. Thank you for your support and for helping to keep Basecamp as a resource on your hero's journey. That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. Men, good luck in all your endeavors and good luck on your hero's journey. This is Tony Rezac, and you're listening to Base Camp for Men.